Join us for the Ag PhD Field Day, Thursday, July 29th on our farm near Baltic, South Dakota. I'm Darren Hefty. We're putting on a full day that you won't want to miss. Yield champs will share about raising yields and profits. Industry experts will discuss drainage law, estate planning, grain marketing, and the H2A program. Plus, we'll show you dozens of research plots and have equipment running out in the field from Case IH, John Deere, AGCO, and more. Don't miss the free Ag PhD Field Day. Register now at agphd.com.
Thank you, thank you. Welcome back. It is Farm Talk. I'm Mick Kerr. And as we mentioned, this day is hot and sticky. And I'm not talking about the weather. I'm talking about markets, marketing grain. It's not uncharted territory. It's unfriendly territory because one day we're up, one day we're down. Mike Krueger. Thank you, Richland IFC, for letting Mike Krueger come on the radio once a week. Sure appreciate that. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Mick.
Yesterday we couldn't get spring wheat to go higher, and today spring wheat was the lone market that was higher. This marketing is topsy-turvy.
Got to have your big boy pants on when you're messing around in these markets. It's been crazy. Just as an example, today, December corn had an 18-cent trading range. Closed 7 lower. That was 12 cents off the low. Soybeans had a 48 cent trading range. Closed 27 lower, but that was 22 cents off the low. And Minneapolis wheat, the September contract, had a 36 cent trading range. Closed 6 higher, 40 some cents off the low. It's just absolutely wild. And we're not done with this yet. And what's interesting to me, and we've talked about it for weeks, is that these markets are now designed for the big money, the big speculative money, the big trading funds, expanded position limits, expanded daily trading limits, all those sorts of things. And, of course, we're also in a weather market. So overnight, apparently, the European weather model looked a little bit wetter, maybe a little bit cooler. So that's why all the lemmings ran over the cliff for the first half of the session today. But there are lots of other private forecasters, as well as National Weather Service forecasts, that don't necessarily agree with that. And I was reading some summaries after the close that, big chunks of Iowa and Nebraska and southern South Dakota are going to be in the mid to upper 90s, maybe 100 next week. So we're not done, but boy, on a day-to-day basis, it makes it tough.
Yeah, I guess. The drought, which began out there in the Pacific Northwest, has been expanding eastward all summer. It's moved through the Dakotas, and now the hot and dry has moved into the Western Corn Belt. So they're going to get a little taste of what we have been experiencing this summer. And it comes at a pretty critical time, pollination time.
Pollination for corn. And, a week from now, it's August. So August is a month for soybeans. I was really amazed that they could take the soybean market apart that easily when it's going to be hot. If you look at those weekly drought monitor maps, nothing's improved. If you look at the weekly crop ratings, for a month, people have said, hey, next week we're going to see a big improvement in the good to excellent in corn and soybeans. Well, it's changed by like 1%. So I think the critical part, of course, now we're almost the end of July. We're in the midst of corn pollination. It's hot. It's dry in the western half of our world. And another weekend, you come back Sunday afternoon and evening, and if the weather forecasts don't show that chance of rain and stay hot and dry, then we've got another wild and volatile week ahead of us next week.
Mike, you mentioned the hedge funds that are participating in the commodity markets because they can make some money at it. And the 401ks are doing good and people who have big bucks to invest. But did the CME group, are they catering? Because once upon a time, the function of the commodity markets was to, and I believe the exact phrase is, to determine an appropriate price for a commodity, wheat, corn, beans, cattle, hogs. But are they catering now to these funds, which are deeply involved and active in the ag commodity markets?
I certainly think they are, and that's been coming for the last 10 or 12 years, specifically since they went totally to electronic trading, because under the old open outcry system, you couldn't handle any place close to the kind of volumes that these markets are trading today electronically. Remember, these exchanges, whether you're talking about the CME group that used to be called the Chicago Board of Trade or the Kansas City Board of Trade, which is now part of that, Minneapolis Grain Exchange has changed ownership a number of times. But those exchanges, make money on volume. They get paid so much to trade. So the more volume they can push through their systems, of course, the better off they are, and so are their shareholders. So yes, it's still a price discovery mechanism. But remember that now when you're talking about the kinds of funds and big money and logarithms and all those sorts of things, these people are not trading like we think in terms of longer term, in terms of the fact that by the time August 30th gets here, and we may have a 5-bushel bigger or smaller soybean yield or whatever the case may be. They're trading, you know, their visions are like minutes or hours and at the biggest days away. So they don't much care what goes on at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. They're concerned about technical patterns, volume flow, trade flow, prices over the next 3 or 4 or 5 minutes or an hour. And that's why I think we get these just enormous swings in these markets. And it's been a lot of years, you know, since we've had the background or the backdrop that creates this kind of volatility, because it's the first time we've had widespread crop problems. Brazil's corn crop's a disaster. They seem to take Russia's wheat crop a little bit more all the time. Spring wheat crop in the U.S. is a disaster. It's almost that in Canada. Canola crop. So all of a sudden, you know, supplies are tightening, China's active, and people are saying, gee, yeah, now we can swing our power and our money over to the ag commodities. And that's what's happening. And when you talk about marketing, that's why things like options, some of these markets are super strong. You know, you get some sales on and or buy some puts. And when the markets are super cheap, you know, or cheap, relatively speaking, you look to put some calls on to protect those sales. And it's not going to change, I don't think, until we get into probably mid-September.
Wow. The type of trader who says, where can I park $1 billion overnight to make money from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. versus the farmer who's got a few bushels to sell, I mean, a few meaning 10 yeah. to 20,000 between now and Christmas. Yeah, it's a whole different, two different worlds.
Huh? It's a challenge, and the same tools still work. It's just that it costs more to use those tools, and the risks are pretty big in both directions.
Yeah, all righty. Well, let's talk about something a whole lot simpler for a little bit before we get back to that. Food-grade soybeans from Richland IFC.
Well, food-grade soybeans, as we've talked for well over a year now, you know, a rapidly growing market. The big market, the big country driving the growth is Japan, but it's all of North Asia. And we can't forget about the U.S. Consumption of food-grade soybeans is expanding in this country as well. They've been considered a specialty crop for years. Richland IFC started in this business 25 to 30 years ago. They've developed their own varieties. They have their own genetics, tight relationships with customers overseas and in the U.S. They've developed these varieties specifically to meet their clients' needs. And it's a difficult proposition for them in these markets as well, because they have contracts to supply people overseas. Farmers who raise food-grade soybeans, and that's Richland's business, is contracting with producers here, have 18 months to price those contracts. They are production contracts, and I think that's important, especially with what's going on this summer. They're production contracts, which means that a farmer doesn't contract 5,000 acres of food-grade soybeans with Richland IFC. They combine, say, 500 acres, and the contract specifies that whatever you produce on those 500 acres, that's what you end up selling to Richland. So that takes away a lot of the exposure in a market like this, where if you did have 5,000 bushels of food-grade beans contract, and if it doesn't rain in the next 30 days and stay hot, and you only get 2,000 bushels, you're at risk. So it's a production contract, and that, I think, is an important thing from a risk management perspective. And the market grows every year. Richland IFC, food-grade soybean market is expanding annually, so every year they need to go out and find more farmers who are willing to plant and raise and harvest and transport food-grade soybeans. And to do that, they have to pay big premiums. I mean, this year's premiums as much as $5 or $5.50 locally more than conventional soybeans. So it's an alternative, and it's an alternative that's going to continue to get bigger. As I mentioned before, just a month or two ago, Northern Crops Institute at NDSU had a couple of day-long seminar for overseas buyers and consumers and processors of food-grade soybeans. So that just is a good signal. They're becoming a bigger part of the market all the time. And Richland IFC has been at the center of the growth.
All right. How did they get a hold of folks at Richland IFC?
Richland IFC's number is 218-643-1797. And if they want to talk to somebody specifically, talk to Rick. He's been in the midst of this for a big chunk of his career. He understands the ins and outs. He's a producer himself. He travels and visits with these markets over in Central and North Asia. So Rick, again, at Richland IFC, the number is 218-643-1797.
Rick at Richland. Easy to remember. All right.
There you go.
Hey, Mike, before we let you go, you obviously still stay, even though you're not involved in a business way with the markets. You obviously got your finger on the pulse of markets day to day. Do you still talk to producers out there?
I do. I still have a number of clients that I talk to fairly frequently. I still have lots of connections overseas from people who I still do webinars for people overseas. I hope once the rest of the world gets this COVID under control that we'll be back to traveling and visiting with overseas buyers. But yes, I hear from people overseas and across the Northern Plains and the Corn Belt in Canada, especially during times like this when markets are crazy and people just want another idea or another opinion. You know, it's been a long time. 1988 was the last significant drought in this country, and you kind of forget that that's 33 years ago, right? So we've got a lot of people in the industry, both on the farming side and the grain elevator side and the processing side, that weren't even born back then. How's that sound?
Wow, yeah. And how? What are your some of your farmer producer friends telling you about harvest reports?
Well, I haven't seen very many actual harvest reports. I've got a very good friend in eastern Montana, and they had rain early. You know, they had a fairly wet April and late March. His winter wheat was probably two-thirds of last year, but his spring wheat, he thinks, will be a total disaster. He did harvest some field peas that went 10 bushels an acre, and he said typically his spring wheat will mirror his peas, so he's not optimistic at all. Also out in that parts of eastern and central Montana, there's a whole lot of spring planted crops now being released by insurance. So anybody who has livestock out there can bale or use silage or grain silage or whatever they can, you know, because feed's going to be so short. And his interesting comment a few days ago was, you know, rain from this point on for him, and he doesn't have corn or soybeans, but rain for him would be a detriment, because it would simply make a bad crop worse if they can't salvage at least what's there.
Yeah.
I suspect in the next week or 10 days, we're going to start to see a lot of harvest reports just as the heat has pushed these crops along, and you know, they're drying down extremely rapidly. I think the interesting thing will be, if we go another week to 10 days across the Northern Plains and even parts of the Western Corn Belt with these high, hot temperatures, I think some of these corn and soybean crops that have really looked pretty good in some spots, we'll start to see the heat take a toll on how they look as well.
For sure. Mike Krueger, thank you very much for your input today. What's Rick at Richland's number again?
218-643-1797. And just one last comment. I just pulled up the 6 to 10 day outlooks that are released every day at about this time. And that the above normal to much above normal heat now extends all the way, you know, east into Illinois. And moisture is still normal or below normal or well below normal. So we'll see what the weather stuff looks, you know, tomorrow and Sunday night, as you know.
At least the smoke is gone for now.
Right. Yeah, keep the wind just a little bit out of the south, right?
Yeah, will do. All right, Mike, thank you. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Mick.
You bet. Mike Krueger, compliments of Richland IFC here on Farm Talk. We'll be right back.